follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello and welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and this is our first show, so I'm really excited to be able to present to you each week experts from many diverse fields which affect family life so that they can share with you their creative ideas for the easiest, most effective, and most fun ways to promote your family's well-being. Whether it's communication, education, health, finances, or whatever, we're going to be discussing them all. So today I'm very honored to introduce to you a longtime friend and dear colleague of mine, Dr. Robert E. Kay. And we'll be talking about unschooling and how children learn best and the impact of schools and colleges and parents on the success of our children. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Dr. Kay before I introduce him. He's a trained psychiatrist, graduated from Tufts University Medical School and had his psychiatric training at Walter Reed General Hospital. Following his military service, he served as medical director at the Center for Child Guidance and was a board member of the school in Rose Valley, Pennsylvania. Father of three children, he works with children, adolescents, adults, and families. He's published numerous articles on interviewing techniques, child rearing, the American school system, and the teaching of reading. In recent years, he's been greatly involved with the homeschooling, the unschooling, and the home education movements, and has presented his ideas on teaching and learning on radio and television and in print, as well as in court. He's also author of the foreword to my book, The Seven Secrets of Successful Parents. So welcome, Dr. Kay.
Thank you, Randy. Good to be with you.
Oh, my pleasure. So I want to today discuss your views on schools and college. So let's start out with what do you see are the main problems today with what schools and college offer in the United States to our kids?
Well, to cover the waterfront very quickly, my main mission in life right now is to try to help schools and colleges turn into mind-expanding and curiosity-enhancing educational institutions, because since 1849 they've been devoted primarily to turning out some variety of factory worker. That's what they were originally put together to do, was to turn out good workers for the assembly lines of the Industrial Revolution. So since we are running out of factories, among other reasons, the schools are just not working very well at all. And as an article in USA Today just mentioned, the public schools are turning millions of normal children into dropouts and failures. And this just can't go on for much longer, I hope. The results, of course, are quite abominable. Only 31% of college seniors now are proficient readers, which is down from 40% 10 years ago. From kindergarten through graduate school, virtually all subject matter is happily forgotten just as soon as summer rolls around. And 80% of preschoolers have a high self-esteem, whereas only 5% of high school seniors still like themselves. But the tragedy of the situation is that we know how to do it right, and a few private places are doing it right, but we know how to do it right, and the system finds it impossible or unable to change the teach 'em, test 'em, measurement, accountability model. So we've really got our work cut out for us.
Yeah, why do you think it is that we're stuck in this model?
Well, it's a good question. Most of the people that I look up to feel that the problem is that of any system whose number one mission is to preserve the jobs of the people in the system. For example, there is no earthly reason to be teaching plane geometry to other than a few people who are clearly heading into engineering. But if we stopped requiring plane geometry, there would be 55,000 plane geometry teachers out of a job. And that, as John Taylor Gatto has pointed out in his book, Dumbing Us Down, is what keeps the system where it is. It's an employment issue for the people in the system.
That can be very serious to try to change that kind of system. Could you, before we talk about what some of the alternative schools are finding that does work, can you comment on the social aspects of school? Because that's a particular interest of mine, bringing up children that are socially adept and can go to an interview in a job and know how to communicate with others, since we're an information age, not a manufacturer age anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the bottom line is, of course, we're a social, cooperative, and altruistic creature on the day of birth, but it takes 20 to 25 years before the brain is fully developed, so we're not going to show our full potential for quite a long time. But most little children are quite sociable, and 80% of them, the preschoolers, have a high self-esteem and are indeed very, very social. And they've actually been able to demonstrate social behavior in 1-week-old infants who will respond to the distress cry of another infant, whereas they will not respond to their own distress cry that has been recorded. So we're a highly social creature before we ever get to the school system, where we're in general, we're put in a situation where we're in competition with every other child for the teacher's attention. We may be in competition for grades and so on. We're in competition for this, that, and the other thing. And this is a profoundly antisocial experience for the vast majority of children, not to mention the fact that they may be punished for talking to another human being, which is absolutely bizarre. I mean, the essence of being human is the willingness to communicate, and you may get punished for that in school. I was, and it's devastating.
Yes, I was indeed myself, and I'll never forget when the teacher, I was in fifth grade, she was just starting to teach the new math, and I was asking too many questions, and she finally just blew up at me and said, "Randy, you're talking about the next chapter. I haven't read it. I don't want to hear from you." And I shut up for years.
Yeah.
I didn't ask the question until I got to college.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and this is craziness. I mean, it is so tragic, because the idea is that somewhere along the line we got the idea that children should be passive and should be taught things, whereas I think Winston Churchill gave the definitive statement when he said, "I love to learn, I just hate being taught." And then George Bernard Shaw went on to say, the only time my education was interrupted was when I was in school. And as John Holt has pointed out in his definitive book, How Children Fail, teaching cannot make learning happen. Or the way he put it was that learning is not the product of teaching. Learning is the product of the activity of the learner, which is another reason why lecturing is so ineffective as a learning technique, unless it's just nowhere compared to actually doing things or hands-on learning. Doesn't work.
Do you think maybe the parents feel that the children need some kind of systemic approach to make sure they get all the technical skills that they need to survive? Is it some kind of insecurity in parents that really cling to a school system that has a prescribed set of studies, regardless of what the interests or curiosity or skill level of an individual child might be?
Well, that's a good question. The Business Roundtable, which has a great deal of influence on the American system, of course, insists that if it can't be measured, it hasn't been learned. And parents have an understandable need to feel that their children are learning and making progress and so on. But I've always been told that a good teacher knows perfectly well just how a child is doing without any testing. You can see, you can watch what they're doing. At the school in Rose Valley where two of my children went, they read aloud to every class every day and then told the kids to go teach themselves in the library, and 97% did very successfully. The other 3% had some kind of inborn dyslexia. And then, believe it or not, they did a 50-year follow-up study, and the kids with dyslexia had done just as well socially, academically, and economically as the normal kids, and some of them still couldn't read very well. So we have a remarkable capacity for working around whatever little defects we may be born with, and some of them are, few are born into the system. But it is this, it's our unwillingness to trust children to try to get their needs met. We're a bunch of needs from the beginning for safety, security, survival, competence, control, and good relationships, that those needs are born into us, and therefore we are impelled to learn, to grow, and to get control over our lives and the world around us. So the result, what has happened, of course, is the development of a very useful model called Invitational Education. .net. In other words, show me what you can do, and then I, or another child will help you do better. And the ultimate manifestation of this approach was a British university where the reward for demonstrated learning in regular classes, the reward for demonstrated learning by your arguments, your criticisms, your questions, your interactions, your discussion, and some good papers, the reward was to be excused from all examinations for the entire 4 years. And those kids studied night and day in order to avoid testing. It was the best thing we've ever done. Another example of an excellent education is Goddard College, where the kids work and study at home or in the community, and then they go to the college for 2 weeks a year just to get a little, I don't know what, organization in the system. But that is an enormously successful program, and there have been other successful programs in college too, but still nothing compares to hands-on learning and experience for real learning.
That's great. Well, I want to hear more about those alternatives, but we have to take a break right now. So
okay.
Thank you, Dr. K, and please stay tuned for more insight.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings of the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Hello, we're back with Dr. Robert E. Kay, a wonderful psychiatrist who's totally up on all the research and articles, and he's going to stop me because that's not totally, you know, you can't say everything always, but he's as close as you can get to that, and I'm very excited to continue our discussion about invitational learning and some of the exciting things that have been done and proven to work well for stimulating kids to learn and to truly benefit from their education. So, Dr. Kay, please tell me about, you were saying some of the wonderful things that Dr. Genat developed.
Okay, can do. Yeah, Haim Genat recommended, and I've used for 30 or 40 years, the idea of telling the child and telling the school that we're going to turn the responsibility for learning and achievement over to the child, which is where it obviously belongs. And the way you do that is you never ask about homework, but you help them if they ask for help, and you never read the report card unless the child gives you the report card, and you tell the teacher you are not going to sign it, and you except in an emergency, obviously, you never talk to the teacher unless your child asks you to talk to the teacher. And under those conditions, after a week or two of goofing off, 95% of the children raise their grades in regular public or private schools. It's the best thing we've ever done, and it's almost as good as a home education or unschooling or whatever you want to call it, because the kid has been empowered that way. Another thing that has helped a great deal that was put together, put on the map by a local college professor, is what we call split-braining. You tell children over the age of 10 to turn half their brains into a floppy disk on which they put everything that the teacher wants to hear about on tests and so on, and then make the other half of the brain into a hard drive on which you put everything that's interesting or useful, like the basic thinking, learning, communicating, and cooperating skills we're born with, plus reading, writing, and arithmetic, and then you're ready to roll out of the credential world into the real world, which wants the basic skills, both personality and inborn skills, and as I said, the three R's. And that's, and then you're ready to learn on the job, where on the job, incidentally, what we call teamwork on the job is called cheating in school. For example, in 50 years as a doctor, I probably never spent 10 milliseconds thinking for myself if somebody else had the answer I needed. There was a job to be done efficiently and quickly, and I wasn't going to sit there and muck around in my head trying to figure things out if somebody else had the answer. So the rule is that that which we call cheating in school is called intelligent teamwork on the job. Now, I would just mention one other experiment and then one suggestion for how to make things much better. The best high school in the world these days, I've been told, is the School of Self-Determination in Moscow, Russia, which became that way overnight by virtue of just one new rule. And the rule was, you do not have to ask permission to leave the classroom. And with that, it became the best high school overnight, and lots of kids stay until 9 o'clock in the evening working on projects. They just need a little bit of control over what happens to them. That has led some people to suggest, and it's never been tried, that the solution to most of our educational problems would be to have the compulsory attendance law apply only as far as the playground, and then let them mill around until they're bored to death, at which point we're convinced that 90% would come indoors within 15 or 20 minutes, and then if they fail to settle down, they could be sent back out to the playground. But 90% of the educators to whom I've suggested this feel it would work beautifully, and nobody has had the courage to try it. So we've got a lot of, and then as I mentioned, invitational education is a very viable model. And then there's the cooperative learning model, which was best seen back in the 1840s when we in Scotland were the two most literate nations on earth, and many kids attended one-room schoolhouses where 250 kids were led by one teacher and two assistants who taught the older kids, who then helped the younger kids learn on down the line. And that was enormously successful. We know that kids, older kids, are very often the best tutors and the best teachers for younger kids. And it should, at one point, as a matter of fact, during an economic crisis, Great Britain was drawing up plans for 1,000 children to the classroom, headed up by just one teacher and two assistants. Well, they never had to put it into effect because the economy recovered, but they never had any doubt that it would work. So the bottom line in this discussion is that there are many things that work. I happen to feel that a home unschooling or a homeschooling is better than is the best of all, as long as you remember the rule of openconnections.org, which is you must never ask a child a question if you already know the answer, because that's something we don't dare do to another adult. That's a game or a maneuver that we only do with children, and it's very scary and potentially very humiliating and potentially rage-producing, because human beings hate to be put on the spot when the other person already knows the answer. We just don't do it to other adults. And speaking of which, we once did a survey, and based on that survey, I think it's safe to say that in all these contiguous United States, there is probably not one single solitary adult who would let the government force them into a school building for just 1 hour a week for just 52 weeks and then make their social security dependent on passing the course. We're doing to children what we don't dare do to another adult. So.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I think of, you know, as an attorney, I have to do 12 hours a year, but it's very hard to get lawyers to do it. They're very slow at it. A lot of them have to be reminded after the year is out. And they now do it long distance because it's hard to get them into a room to take the course. And they, if they were tested, there would be such a protest.
Yeah.
It would never happen.
Yeah, yeah. Very difficult. Yeah. And it's all done with the best of intentions. I mean, we feel that it is the obligation of the adults to teach the young. Well, it is the obligation of the adult to demonstrate, to chit-chat, to talk, to reveal, to guide, to stimulate, to show them the world, to indicate possibilities, to warn them of dangers. Yes, the adults have a great deal of demonstrating and teaching to do. The problem is, obviously, that it is extremely difficult in a coercive, testing, adult-child situation to get something from our head into their head. We don't like to be taught, as Winston Churchill said. It doesn't work. We love to learn. We love to be stimulated. But we do not like to be put on the spot and have stuff stuffed into us.
Yes, that's so true. And even President Obama said recently that a quarter of American high schoolers are not finishing school. And yet we have parents who are trying hard to have their children succeed in sports so that they can get a scholarship to the college of their choice.
Oh, sure.
And with all the to-do over the book about the tiger mom who learned from
child, that's a winner.
That, you know, if you're trying to produce a prodigy of some kind, first of all, in sports, a lot of the children's injuries are coming from all that pressure they feel.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd love you to comment on that desire to have your child excel in something so that they can make it through college. And hopefully that means they're going to get some kind of well-paying job. And it's a long-term goal of the parents, but the children have to deal with that all through their young lives.
Yeah. Well, I would refer I'm sorry, am I interrupting?
No,
okay.
I want to comment.
Yeah, I would refer to an article in the New York Times of March 7th by Paul Krugman called Degrees and Dollars. We are in a great deal of trouble. We have millions of people with all sorts of fancy degrees and no place to use them. So we're the credential society, which we have become since 1945, this started really, these credentials that we're earning may or may not result in our becoming decently employed. And right now I was just reading about a great glut of PhDs who can find no positions in academia or anywhere else. And our young people now have run up just almost $1 trillion in student debt. Other issues involved, of course, are that in all the history of the human race, Only four big-time creative people did well in school. That was Land, Chomsky, Oppenheimer, and Dyson, whereas all the studies that I know of indicate that those kids who never go to school at all, the home unschoolers, are apt to end up on top of the heap socially, psychologically, intellectually, physically, and they do very well academically because they're snapped up. The good colleges like the homeschoolers. And incidentally, one advantage to homeschooling is that you may have much less in the way of back problems. Right now, between the ages of 9 and 16, 60% of our children appear to be on the way to developing chronic back problems. And a Canadian government study that came out about 40 years ago concluded that the major cause of musculoskeletal disease in the adult is the elementary school system. Well, two other issues are immediately involved. One is that in wealthy Switzerland, with the highest level of civic engagement, civic involvement in the world, 77% of the kids leave school at age 14 to go to work or into a training program. All this college going is from a psychological and an intellectual and a economic and a vocational point of view is quite unnecessary, but we have developed what's known as the credential society. There was a report in the Wall Street Journal. Sorry?
Dr. K, hold on to that. We need to take a break
Righto.
Right now. Please, everybody, stay tuned in to listen to more from Dr. K. And can't wait to hear the rest. Thank you.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Hello and welcome back to our wonderful interview with Dr. Robert Kay. He's a psychiatrist and an expert in adolescence and education and has really made it his goal to improve the quality of education through reform of the schools and even abolishing the traditional conventional school because it's only 100 years old and it's outworn its usefulness. We were just talking about the problems that young people have with back problems because of the backpacks, and I remember when they made that change, I dragged a big bag around school, and now they put it on their backs, and many kids have problems. And like you said, in Switzerland, The kids get into the world at 14, and they're the most involved citizens in the world. So you were about to go forward from there, Dr. Kay, and I'd love to give you the space.
Yeah, we're still here.
Yes. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I think that, it's this business of expecting active little children to sit still in class for 30, 40 minutes at a time. I mean, this is a very unbiological thing to do. My kids went to the school in Rose Valley where, to the best of my knowledge, they have never seen a case of ADHD, or also known as attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, because any time a kid feels like running around, which is what children are supposed to do, they just got up out of the class and ran around the campus until they were ready to come back and settle down. But you can do that in a sort of freewheeling, progressive kind of a school where the child is responsible for what he gets involved in from moment to moment. And no child, in their experience, will just sit around and do nothing. Everybody wants to be doing something or learning something or interacting. But the bottom line in this physical business is that they were able to run around and get plenty of exercise, which is what small children and middle-aged children and elderly children are supposed to do. So and we also know, there have also been studies to indicate that children learn best when they're moving around. Now, I don't know very much about that study, but it's been out there for about 50 years that the best learning is when you're interacting and learning with another person, as well as when you're moving around. And I do recall that they decided that mathematical reasoning was 7 times as efficient when done by 3 kids together as when it was done alone. If you want to solve mathematical problems, the way to do it is with 1 or 2 other people. It's far more efficient that way. But this crazy business where we expect everybody to study alone and learn alone and take tests alone and then grade them based on whatever, it just makes no sense to me, and it doesn't work. We know that first of all, as I said before, those who never go to school are snapped up by the good colleges, and just over half the PhDs in America graduated in the bottom half of their high school class. And as I mentioned before, only 4 big-time thinkers in the history of the world did well in school, among which was not included Bill Gates, who dropped out of Harvard after about 2 months, and I think he's done pretty well since then without a Harvard degree. So, as a matter of fact, most of the leadership of the high-tech community did very badly in school, if they went at all. So it's such a strange and interesting picture. And then, of course, we have the problem that, as illustrated by Dave Halberstam's book, The Best and the Brightest, which was an examination of how the high-achieving graduates of our most prestigious institutions got thoroughly stuck in Vietnam, mostly because they could no longer ask the right questions, like what are we doing and why are we doing it and can we win if we can't identify the enemy and so forth. And still, the high-achieving Ivy League graduates are getting us into a great deal of trouble in the Wall Street department, not to mention the war machine. So it's a very tricky, sad picture.
Yes, it certainly is. And go ahead, narrowing in on the individual family, Dr. Kay, I know when we homeschooled our children, one of the reasons was because we felt that there was a very artificial social situation, one authority and many kids all expected to do the same thing when they were all different, just the age similarity.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when my children got a little antsy, they were working on some reading or some math problems, I would tell them to go outside and run around for a few minutes, and they always came back in, settled down, and and got on with what they were interested in. So
yeah.
I think that study about running is really is true, getting them moving. And they also say adequate sleep is important. And when I was teaching parents about homeschooling, one of their biggest complaints was that the stress in the family was from getting the kids up in the morning and getting them to bed at night, because the school schedule wasn't that interesting to them, and it also wasn't quite in line with their own sleeping needs. And
yeah.
Today we have the problem of having screens and TVs in their rooms, and I just read a study about that having TV in a child's room increases their chances of being overweight because they watch TV an extra hour.
Terrible problem. The major reason for why the creativity of our young and the IQs of our young are slowly dropping, the major reason I would suspect is the fact that the average American child is now wired up 7.5 hours a day. I mean, this is really amazing, the amount of time that they're spending each week on these various electronic gadgets. The situation is such that the American Academy of Pediatrics has recommended that all electronic gadgets be kept in the kitchen, where they can be under the tight control of the parent. Well, I don't know if anybody's actually done that or not, but it certainly should be done, because these machines are absolutely devastating. There are a number of good books out on the subject. One is that I was just reading the other day is called The Shallows by Nicholas Carr, regarding what the Internet is doing to our brain. And then there's another called Virtually You, about how it's changing our personalities. And the name is very obscure, of the book Virtually You. But there's a lot of stuff coming out about the problem with all these electronic gadgets.
Yeah, I've talked to children who would rather text a friend than talk to them. And that's a deep concern to me.
Oh, yeah. Big problem. Big problem. As a matter of fact, actually, one of the amusing findings is that kids are no longer so anxious to drive anywhere, because they don't feel they need to drive anywhere to see their friends. They can just text them an average of 40 times a day. The average child in America with a cell phone, or whatever they call those things, is sending out 40 messages a day. It's really incredible.
Yes, and they have a whole different way of spelling, too, to keep it short.
Oh, yeah.
it's quite interesting. We're up on another break, Dr. Kay, so please, our listeners, hang in there. We have a few more minutes with Dr. Kay and all his great insights, and how us parents can help our kids learn, even if they are going to these traditional schools.
Yep, okay.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Hello, and welcome back. We're speaking with Dr. Robert Kay about unschooling and how children learn best and the impacts of schools and colleges, and we just have a few more minutes. I love what you've said about parents being able to trust that the child has an inborn curiosity, inborn desire to stay active and get involved and do things, and that we are over-medicating them and putting them in front of screens when they'd really rather be doing something useful and meaningful and learning as they go. So what are some practical tips at this point, Dr. Kay, for parents to increase their child's success in actually getting educated, not just doing well at school or picking up information that they're going to forget over the summer?
Yeah, since we're a learning animal on the day of birth, it shouldn't be very difficult to, well, every, for example, the most difficult thing any of us have ever learned in our entire life is how to speak the native tongue. And every child, every non-brain damaged child, teaches themselves how to speak without any teaching whatsoever. The parents, all the parent has to do is talk and chit-chat and just be a normal parent, and children will imitate and teach themselves how to speak. And that's an enormously complicated process, which virtually every child does. And as a matter of fact, the Bernstein studies showed that poor black children were just as effective at communicating their basic wishes, needs, and reactions as middle class white children. So every child does this incredible job of learning, and it's not very difficult to help them expand on what is basically inborn. But as has been recommended, we should be rigidly controlling the electronic gadgets. The American Academy of Pediatrics not only would like all gadgets in the kitchen, but says no TV until age 2 at all, and then no more than 1 hour a day between age, let's say, 3 and age 12. We've really got to put our foot down, and if the child objects, they should be encouraged to go have a temper tantrum. And if they don't know how to have a temper tantrum, it's the job of the parent to get down on the floor and bang their head and bang the feet and show them how to have a good temper tantrum, at which point the kid starts laughing, and that's the end of the problem. So the parents do have to set limits as to what sort of gadgets the child gets involved in, but it's extremely easy to help children learn. It's called a pack of cards, a Monopoly set, reading aloud to them, followed by choral reading, which is a reading in unison, which is a very simple and productive method. There's only one method that's even better than that choral reading, and that is to tell a 5-year-old child or 4-year-old child that they're not allowed to teach themselves to read until the brain is big enough, at which point you can't stop them from teaching themselves. I know two librarians who were not allowed to read at home because that's something you learn to do in school. So both of them became librarians. I mean, it's extremely easy to help children learn. Playing the school game, of course, is another situation, and that's where the Heimgenot thing comes in. Most children would like not to fail. They don't want to fail. They want to stay up with their peers, so they will do enough work to get through the system.
Yeah, I think I was talking to a couple of parents about homeschooling, and they said, oh dear, they each had a friend who had turned their home into a school. They said every moment was programmed to cram knowledge into the children, and they were frightened by homeschool.
Of course.
I've talked to so many homeschool families, and I'd never heard that before. So that's the ultimate in trying to bring the school home instead of trying to bring the natural home-type learning into the school.
Sure, of course. So, yeah, anybody can write to me, and I'll send them a copy of a one-page thingy about how benevolent despots can homeschool successfully, if they will write to me at apartment 15E 210 Locust Street, Philadelphia, PA 19106.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And I'd be happy to send them the thing. It's very easy to help children learn, but it is very difficult to play teach them, test them. Human beings don't like teaching.
Right, yeah, that the testing, I love that, of not asking a child a question you know an answer to, because they know you know the answer, so they are embarrassed.
Yeah.
They know that you're just testing them to see if they know what you already know they know.
Yeah.
It's a very strange situation.
That's something that no self-respecting chimpanzee would ever do. And they're very effective at helping their children learn how to be an adult chimpanzee, but without any testing whatsoever. It's quite amazing.
Yes, indeed. I know you've actually compared us with the primate learning processes. And what we did, my husband and I, when we were raising our kids, we really wanted to continue that natural learning, which was so evident in the early years, and keep their curiosity the motivating force, because they would read and do numbers on any subject they were fascinated by, rather than inventing a reading subject or a writing subject. We just got them interested in what they were interested in, and then they did all the reading and numbers they needed to do.
Sure. Not very difficult.
So that's one of my favorite ideas, is that we are programmed to parent. It's not as hard as we make it. But when we try to use all these institutions, it becomes much more complex.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not quite getting what your question is. Repeat again, would you?
Well, most parents are sending their kids to school, so they do have to deal with that institution. And in this economy, parents are working even longer hours, so it's hard to find the time to stimulate and encourage and empower their children. So what final suggestions can you give on that note?
Oh, I wish I had one final suggestion. That's pretty tough. I think the final suggestion is, trust that your children want to get their needs met for safety, security, comfort, pleasure, and decent relationships with other people. That's what we're born. Those are the inborn needs. And because of that wish to survive and also wish to be well connected with other people, children will do all sorts of wonderful learnings as time goes on, but never as quickly or as efficiently as we would like them to do. But most people grow up to become reasonably decent human beings, despite the very strange things. The first thing I learned when I took my psychiatric residency was that the major cause of mental illness is separate bedrooms. It's putting infants into a crib in a separate room, it's really setting the stage for trouble. Now, most of us got away with it, and it's not automatically going to do anything terrible, because at least, 70 or 80% of the people managed to limp through life one way or the other, despite the very strange things we tend to do with our children, and I'm including myself in that, because we did not do a perfect job either.
Yeah, that's so true. What happens in childhood does affect us later, but most people find ways to get beyond it. And I do want to end on that wonderful suggestion of trusting that the child wants to be a fully fledged, happy,
right,
healthy human being, and we can follow our intuitions about how to support them and empower them to do that.
And the good news is that the brain is the one organ that keeps on growing until the day we die. If it's stimulated properly, we get healthier and healthier as the years go by.
That's wonderful news.
Yep, it is good
I love
news.
That. Yes. So the show really does go by so quickly, and thank you for sharing so many wonderful references and your address for people to reach you at apartment 15E, 210 Locust Street in Philadelphia, 19106, if they would like to get a copy of some of your wonderful articles. And you have editorials from time to time in the newspapers. Those are always exciting to see. And so I really want to thank you for being on
the show. I enjoyed it. Thanks, Randy.
Good. I'll have you back again.
And
thanks. Next week, my guest will be Dr. Phil Friedman, a psychotherapist who's written a wonderful book on forgiveness, which is a concept seldom emphasized in psychology, but which is critical in the well-being of a family, whether it's forgiving yourself or others. So do listen in next week, and you can contact me, as they said on the announcement, Randy Rolfe at randyrolfe.com or randyrolfe@gmail.com, and have a winning week. Thank you for listening.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.